Are you a rural farming woman, wife or mother, struggling to find peace in your busy life? Do you find yourself trying to squeeze joy out of your daily routine, manage stress that seems never-ending, and somehow reconnect with your passions in the midst of it all? Do you love your rural life, yet often feel overwhelmed by the challenges it brings? Welcome to Cultivate Contentment, the podcast designed just for you. I'm Jessica Knight, a fellow rural woman, wife and mother, and I get it. I've been there. Right there in the trenches, juggling the demands of farm life, motherhood, and carving out moments to take care of myself. Come along with me and my guests as we explore balancing farm life with personal needs on a realistic level. Practical ways to sprinkle a little joy and peace into your daily routine, nurturing relationships without losing your sense of self, and how to keep stress at bay and prevent burnout, all while staying focused on what we really want, feeling content and settled in our lives. So whether you're savouring a cup of coffee before the morning chaos begins, stealing a moment of quiet on your drive to town, or popping in your earbuds while wrestling with laundry and dishes, I invite you to join me. Let's laugh, learn, and cultivate contentment together. Hello, and welcome back to Cultivate Contentment. This is Jess, and thank you for joining me today. I know that I have had a week. A very big week. And I think that is how a lot of us are feeling at the moment. This week's been very busy for me on the farm. We've had some staff away on study tours, going and learning new things, but it means that I have to step up a little bit into more of a role on the farm than what I usually have. And so it's calving. We're still in calving. There is 15 girls left in the paddock. And if you're from a dairy farm, you'll know that those last 15 just seem to take forever to calve. And for us, we have a really tight calving pattern. So it's not the case, but it just feels like it. But anyway, I've got about 90 calves in the shed that I'm feeding at the moment. And I've been doing that for a week on my own. And I can tell you that exhaustion is definitely hitting. I've also had it that I'm getting up earlier than I usually would. And my problem is that if I am getting up at a different time to what I usually do, my brain just sits there going, oh, I wonder what time it is. Is it time to get up yet? Oh, I think you should check the clock. I think that we should be up now. And so I'm waking up at like 3 o'clock. And I really just want to be asleep. But my stupid brain is there just going, no, let's check the time. So that's the week I've had. And it's also been a big week with the kids. They've had a lot going on. We've had a lot of appointments. We've started into new sports seasons. And it really got me thinking about the challenges that we face as rural mums. So that's what today's episode is going to be all about. It's those real life challenges that we face raising kids in rural communities and on farms. And it's tough, but there are so many ways that we adapt and overcome. So I'm going to do how I've overcome 3 challenges of raising kids rurally that I never expected or thought about before I had kids. Today, I'll be sharing that while raising kids here on the farm and in a rural community is really great, there are some challenges. And spoiler alert, there'll be some laughs, some relatable moments, hopefully some tips that you can take away to use in your own life. And I'll be sharing something we can all relate to, the constant muddy boots and the laundry. But I'll dive into some more serious challenges like the limited access to medical services that we have and helping our little kids deal with sometimes the loneliness of living out on a farm or in rural communities that make it a little bit more challenging for them. So by the end of the episode, I hope that you'll feel reassured that you're not alone in these unique challenges we face in raising kids in rural areas. Let's jump into it. Before we get into the nitty-gritty of these challenges, I just want to remind you how much your feedback means to me. If you're enjoying this podcast and want to hear more, please take a moment to leave a rating and review wherever you are listening. It helps me reach more rural mums like you, and it keeps this community growing stronger. So your reviews are how we cultivate a space where we can all share, learn, and feel supported together. The first thing I'm going to talk about is limited access to medical services. This is probably one of the biggest hurdles that we face living rurally. It's accessing medical services for our kids. And it's sad that this is probably the first thing that I'm going to talk about, but I think it is probably the most serious and the most challenging thing that I hear so many rural mums talk about. So where I live, wait times for your GP is around 10 weeks. And also, getting into the same doctor can be really, really tricky. It seems that they don't tend to stay. They do a rotation and then they move on. And a lot of the doctors that were regular doctors here are getting older, they're retiring, or they're known to the community, so everyone wants to see them because they built that relationship with them. Now, I know when I was growing up, we had one doctor in my town. And yes, I did live in a small town, a bit smaller than the one I live in now, but one doctor. And I remember that this was the doctor who was at the hospital when I was born. He was then my doctor until we moved when I was around 7. And I remember him doing house calls when I was a kid. And I think that's amazing. And I would so love that service back again, because when you've got a sick kid, the last thing you want to do is get them into the car. Well, first you've got to get them out of bed, and then you've got to get them dressed, or in my case, a lot of the time it's putting on slippers and a dressing gown or an hoodie, or they can just go in their pajamas. But then you've got to get them in the car, you've got to take them to the doctor, you've got to sit around and wait. And, you know, they're already sick, their immune system's low, so let's just, you know, expose them to the rest of the germs in the medical center. But yeah, I remember him and a nurse doing a call when I was really, really sick as a kid and had this raging temperature. They came and checked me at home. And I know that it's probably not feasible because we live in bigger towns these days, so those sorts of things are a bit more logistically tricky. So when my boys were born, I remember that we actually had trouble finding a GP because they weren't open to new patients. So we rang the local GP and they said, oh, well, actually, our books are closed right now. We don't have room for new patients. So we had to register at a medical center in the next town over, about half an hour away, which isn't bad in the scheme of things because I know there are people traveling a lot further to see a GP. The point of this is that building a relationship with the GP, who is your first source for medical care, if you can't see the same GP regularly, you're telling your history over and over. You're starting from scratch. And when you have medically complex kids, you don't want to have to be giving that story of they were born premature. They had breathing trouble. They had this hospitalization and this hospitalization. They've suffered from this, and this is why they're on this medication. And a lot of the time, they're then starting to ask different questions to the doctor before them and asking, well, why did that doctor do this? And why is this? And you're sitting there going, I'm the mum. I'm not the doctor. I can't tell you what that doctor was thinking when they prescribed this medication or when they took this course of action. Being able to see the same doctor regularly is really important for those medically complex kids. And also for them to build that relationship with the doctor, because I know that my boys, going in and seeing a stranger when you're not feeling well, they're not going to open up and say, you know, this is how I'm feeling, this is what hurts. They're going to clam up. And then you're trying to say to the doctor, well, this is what they've told me, this is how they feel. And my kids are getting to the age where the doctor wants to talk to them because they are old enough to express how they're feeling. But if they're going to shut down because it's a stranger, it makes it really hard to get the right treatment for them. And so then moving on beyond that first point of care with your GP, you go into pediatricians. Next point of call for us, if you have a kid that has a problem or a concern that the GP says, yeah, I think we need to explore this further. So we travel to Melbourne, 3.5 hours away, to see a pediatrician because we had one here who was brilliant in our local town. It was a pediatrician at the hospital where they were born, and we had him for 10 years. We built a really great relationship. He knew my boys really well, but then he moved on to a different job. Accessing another pediatrician in our town wasn't possible. Extremely long wait lists. We're talking upwards of at least 6 months, sometimes closer to 12. And then you might see that pediatrician and go, well, actually, they're not the right fit for my kid. And so you're exploring other options and going back on those wait lists again, which is what we had to do. So now we see pediatricians in Melbourne who are absolutely fantastic. They talk to my boys and they just develop this rapport and relationship. But when we want to see them, the first time we wanted to see them, we had to travel to Melbourne, which is a big thing for kids. And so then we move on to, you know, those other allied health services. You've got speech pathologists, psychologists, occupational therapists. We're looking in rural areas years. I know that we have been on wait lists for some of these services for 3 years. And every time I ring up and say, you know, have we made any movement on the wait list? No. Because they've got enough clients at the moment. And for us to get a spot, a client literally has to leave and stop coming. And so we're just sitting there on these services. And this is private services. So if you want to get these services public through the public hospital, you're looking, I've heard of people that have been told 5 years. 5 years to get your kid in to see a specialist to get the help that they need. And I just find this, it's appalling. It really is that these are the things that our kids need, and it's years of waiting to get them in. And I think it even starts before this. Like, I know that some of my friends that live in the city, when their kids were born and say they had trouble breastfeeding, they could get a lactation consultant to come to their house within a matter of a day. And when we explore these sorts of services in rural areas, we just find they're not available. It just takes so much more planning when you live in rural areas to get your kids the services and the help that they need. So how I've overcome this one, well, a little bit at least, because I can't change the waitlist times. I can't change the amount of services that we have access to in rural areas, but there are some people doing fantastic work in these areas, and I would love to hear from them. If there is anyone who would like to guest on the podcast about this topic, or you know someone who you think should, please reach out, because I'd really like to dive deeper into this one beyond my own personal experience. So what I've found is being prepared makes all the difference. Like I've said, building that really strong relationship with your local GP and having someone you trust who knows all your kids' health history is invaluable. If you know that your kid's going to need regular appointments with a GP, start booking them well in advance, because that's the only way you're going to get them in when you need them. For reference, my kids have asthma. So we do 3 monthly asthma reviews with our GP. So I book them in 12 months in advance. I book them in because it's the only way I'm guaranteed to get the doctor that I want and get in at the time that they need that. With specialists, those appointments require a trip to the city. What I do, because I have multiple kids that need to see their specialists, is that I'll make sure that I can book all of them in on the same day. We're not doing multiple trips down there for them to see the same specialist at different times. To start with, their appointments didn't line up, but I said, well, look, we live this far away. Can I please schedule the next one? I know this one will be a little bit close to his appointment, but it needs to line up, because that's the only way it's feasible for us to get them all here. And I find that they are really understanding of the situation, and they'll help you book in the day and the time that suits you if you just explain your situation, that we're not just a 10-minute drive away. this is our day for us to come down and get back home. Now, that way we're not constantly driving back and forth to the city and pulling kids out of school on different days, and it just makes it all the more coordinated. Now, after your first appointment, because they do like to see them in person for that first one, ask for telehealth, because this is a game changer. I think after COVID, it just opened so many doors to accessing health services for our kids. Being able to have a video call with a specialist or a doctor for those in between, I think for ours, they like to see them in person every 6 months, but any in between that, you can schedule telehealth. And it just makes things so much easier. The last thing I'll say is being organized. At the end of the day, being organized and prepared at home is key for me. Having all the boys' medical records up to date, making sure they've got all their essential medications on hand. Like I said, they have asthma and they have some other things that they need medication for. So having scripts and making sure that those scripts are up to date and they're not going to expire, because I have had it where they've expired and then you're frantically trying to get through to the pediatrician's office and saying, we don't have a valid script, and they're doing the best they can, but if your pediatrician isn't in the office on those days, yeah, you're not going to get the script that day, and it could be a week sometimes. So before we have our appointments, I always make sure I go through all of the medications and make a note of anything that's been happening that I want to talk to them about. And don't be afraid to walk into that appointment with a notepad of every single question that you want to ask. That way you're not walking out or getting to the next day and going, oh, I forgot to ask about this or that, and I forgot this medication. The last piece of advice I'll give here is do not be afraid to be the pushy mum, okay? Because if you don't push, if you don't advocate for your child, then you will get nowhere. I am the mum who has rung specialists weekly and said, where are we on the wait list? Do you have any cancellation spots? Can we please be put on the cancellation list? Is there any out-of-hours appointments, weekend appointments? Is there any other new specialists coming into the clinic that we could see? Because if you don't keep pushing, then you don't get to where you need to for your kids. And I am not ashamed to be called a pushy mum, because I'm advocating for my child. And sometimes being pushy is the only way you're going to get anywhere. So never feel bad for being that mum that is constantly ringing up and asking questions and seeing when you can get into services for your child. So the next one is dealing with feelings of loneliness that kids might have living rurally and out on farms. Because I think a lot of rural mums can relate to how isolated your kids can feel. And I know we live fairly close to town and my kids go to school in town, but there are many mums who live much more rurally than me and who do school of the air and those sorts of things. And that socialization of their kids is much trickier. When the kids were younger, this wasn't really something that we struggled with. But now they've got to the age where my oldest son's friends walk home from school by themselves, or they go down the street together after school and he wants to join in. They ride their bikes to each other's houses and we're out of town. And none of those things are possible for them because they catch a bus home from school. On top of that, it just means that being involved in any after-school activities or sports, it means we're in the car a lot. We're driving to town a lot. And if you are a rural mum, you will come to accept the fact that you will spend a lot of time in your car. One of the ways that you overcome this is trying to get your kids involved on the farm, trying to make the weekends fun for them. Harder if your kids don't want to be involved on the farm, which some of mine have no interest in being outside and helping with chores or, you know, their chores. To them, they are chores and they have no interest in being there. Trying to create family traditions at home, like pizza nights on a Friday or game nights or that sort of thing, which I know as my boys get even older, to them is just going to probably sound like torture rather than a fun time. But trying to make it that you're creating real connections with them. But also at the same time, I know how important it is for kids to have friendships and social interactions outside of their family. We make a real effort to get them to whatever sports activities they want to be involved in. And we prioritize trying to organize those play dates and things that my younger son is just still in love with. He loves just spending time with his classmates on weekends or after school and that sort of thing. It is so tricky trying to fit all of those things, especially when you're driving long distances, to make it happen. It is spending a lot of time in the car. And if you want your kids to have those connections, you have to be willing to drive them to those activities and to friends' houses. So many hours of my week are spent driving. I think a lot of mums will relate that we are part-time taxi drivers at this point, and it is going to be that way for many years to come. For me here, screen time comes in. And I know that screen time is a controversial thing. Not all parents like it. Not all are on board with it. And that's fine. For me, I'm going to be real here. Technology is a huge part of how my boys stay connected with their friends. They love playing Minecraft online, and it's a great way for them to be able to interact with their friends, even if they're physically far away. But I've had to find a balance between letting them enjoy that screen time, but making sure they're not just sitting on their screens all day. Because if given the choice, some of my children would just sit on that screen, like for a week straight. They wouldn't move. But they've got to move. They've got to get outside. There's got to be some fresh air. There's got to be some time away from staring at a screen all the time, even if that's their connection to their friends. So rules for screen time, I've come to see that it's moderation, and that screen time really allows them to be connected to their friends, which is really important to them. So while I don't understand Minecraft, and I've tried, I really have tried, to them, it's a big part of their life. It may not be something that I ever understand or connect with, but they do. Especially on rainy days, cold days, we're coming into the cold season here, and going outside, it just doesn't, you know, they can go out for little periods of time and they will go out for a bit. They'll jump on the trampoline, they'll kick their football around, but then they're like, Mum, I'm done. Board games are an option, but when you've got competitive children like mine, they don't always end well. The Monopoly board gets flipped a lot in this house. Minecraft with their friends is what keeps them happy and connected, but it's all about balance. So the last one I'll talk about is a bit more lighthearted, I guess. It's dealing with the constant muddy boots and the dirty clothes, because I don't remember this as a kid, but then I was a girl and I only had a sister. And we didn't do, you know, we lived in town. So there wasn't all the possibilities of getting dirty and muddy and everything like there is out on the farm, or even just having boys who play a lot of sport. So I know that all mums will understand this. Some will say it's just a part of farm life, isn't it? There is just no way to keep things clean when the kids are running around outside, chasing animals, playing in the dirt, playing sport. And then, of course, we've got the wet weather, which means they're not just dirty, they're soaked through. I made the mistake of letting my son go out and play soccer before school the other day, and he was in his school uniform, ready to go. And I'm like, yep, no worries. Not realizing that we got to the point where there was a lot of dew on the ground in the mornings now. And he came back in and he'd been doing soccer slides, because we cannot play soccer without doing the soccer slides. And he was drenched, like head to toe drenched. And I'm rushing around the house trying to find another school uniform for him to wear. And so I think we can all agree that a lot of farm kids have their farm clothes, town clothes. Trying to keep the mud out of the house is a daily struggle. I can say that I was not prepared for the amount of washing that would come with having three kids. And I think three boys is creating even more, because they tend to just strip off clothes and leave a trail of destruction behind them. They've really taken to putting the sprinkler under the trampoline this summer and jumping with the sprinkler underneath and everything. But they'll just strip clothes off along the way. And then my back porch is just clothes. And I'll say, it'll get to the point where they're like, Mum, I've got nothing to wear. And I'm like, where are your clothes? They're not in the wash basket. They're not in your room. And I got to the back porch and there's just clothes along the porch, out on the grass, everywhere. And I don't understand it, because I don't know if it's just a boy thing, but you take your clothes off, you put them in the wash basket. This is obviously a parenting failure moment here where I have not been able to instill this skill in my boys. But I think even just as a new mum, I didn't realize the amount of washing that there would be. And now, admittedly, I had reflux babies, so there was just so much washing, like burp cloths and clothes, theirs and mine. I think I spent like the first 4 years of motherhood just smelling like sour milk. And because it just feels like it soaks into your skin at some point, or it soaks into the clothes, and no matter how many times you wash them, that smell just isn't coming out. I was really ambitious too with my first two. We use cloth nappies. So I added in some extra washing there and it was great. I loved using them. But by the time I got to my third, those cloth nappies were just not happening. I had too much washing on my plate already and those cloth nappies just did not get used with my third. I don't know. It's just a never-ending cycle of clothes. And I think too that once we accept that there's always going to be clothes to be washed, there's always going to be a load in the washing machine, and there's probably always going to be a load either in the dryer or out on the line, then we'll feel a lot better. Because I now accept that there is never going to be a point in my life where all of the washing is done and I have nothing in any of those three places. It's just not happening. How do I overcome this one? I don't think I overcome it. I think it's maybe just how do I deal with it. For me, I try to have systems and I feel like I change depending on the season I'm in of what system I'm using. I've gone through really structured times of this day of the week I wash these clothes and this day of the week I wash these clothes, or I have a set day of the week and I just spend the day washing and that's all I do that day. Or I try to have it that the boys, you know that on this day they've got to have all their washing in the basket or it doesn't get washed. Yeah, that one didn't work. Just hot tip for you there. Doesn't work. We do have a rule in our house. No shoes past the front door. It's a rule. I don't say it works, but it is a rule we have. One of my boys, I don't know, he just can't. And he wears them through the house. And he loves doing this with his football boots on, with all the grass on them and the mud and the everything. And it just gets traipsed through the house. So we're working on that one. I have the rule. Putting it in place and actually getting them to follow it, that's a whole different point. It's accepting that my front porch does not look like a magazine cover of what a front porch looks like at a farmhouse, because those pretty porches, you know, they're the ones with the white banisters and the pretty painted white farmhouse. And they've got a swing on the front porch and they've got pretty potted plants and it's all neat and tidy and there's a lovely rug and a front entrance mat. And yeah, you know the ones I'm talking about. That's not real. Okay. That's only in magazines. It does not exist in real life, especially if you have children, because my front porch looks like a shoe graveyard. There is just shoes and boots and gumboots everywhere. And no matter how many times I tidy them, within a few days, they're all just back everywhere, scattered everywhere. So accepting that this is my front porch and letting it go, or trying to let it go, is the best thing that you can do for your sanity. Another thing that helped, especially when the boys were real little, like we're talking just learning to walk up until probably the age of 5, is your overclothes, your heavy duty waterproof coveralls that they can put on over their clothes to keep everything dry and clean, and you can just hose them down out in the backyard. they help keep the mud and the wet off their clothes and reduce the amount of full outfit changes that they have to go through in a day. But let's be real, it always comes back to laundry in the end. Laundry is just the bane of my existence. It's constant. And there are days where I feel like the washing machine never stops running. If I'm honest, it's probably all week. It just feels like it's just running all the time. But I do find, and I know this is probably going to sound strange, I find winter easier than summer because I hate hanging clothes out on the washing line. Hate it with passion. I don't know why, but I don't know if it just comes down to my lack of organizational skills in this area, because the job of getting the clothes out of the washing machine, taking them out to the clothesline, hanging them out, and then remembering to get them back in at the end of the day, I just don't know what it is about my brain, but it's just a really difficult one for me. But moving the clothes to the dryer and getting them out of there at the end of the day, no issues. No issues there whatsoever. But if my husband sees me running the dryer during summer when our clothes could be drying out on the line, yeah, it doesn't go down real well. And he does hang his own clothes out on the washing line for reference. I don't do his washing. He is a grown man and can do his own washing. I think that while the laundry will never truly go away, it's having a system or a routine that works for you. And finding that one is hard and will change as you go through seasons of life. At the moment, my routine is that I put a load on at night. So usually as I'm getting the kids ready for bed, I put a load of laundry on and it's washed for the next day. And if the weather's nice, I can hang it out. If the weather's not nice, I'll pop it in the dryer. And I will also set an alarm on my phone to remind me to get it in at the end of the day, because that is the only way it's going to get back into my house from the clothesline. I'm not going to remember it on my own. And that's something I've come to accept about myself. Those are just three of the challenges that I've faced raising kids in a rural environment. And I know I'm not alone in this, and I know that there are many more we could talk about. There's so much beauty in raising kids on the farm, and I think the lifestyle can be romanticized sometimes, and it's good to acknowledge the challenges that do come with it. It comes with its own set of unique struggles. So I'd love to hear from you. What challenges have you overcome raising kids in a rural area? Or what challenges do you have that you're currently facing that you would like either help or support or just acknowledgement that this is what's hard? Please share this episode on your socials. Tag me, put what you are going through at the moment, or share what you can suggest for other rural mums, because we all face similar challenges. And when we can support each other, then that's the way that we help other rural women to cultivate contentment in their daily lives. And remember that we're all in this together. Raising kids rurally might be tough, but together we're finding ways to make it work and sprinkle a little joy into every day. Thanks for joining me. Thank you for joining me on this episode of Cultivate Contentment. I hope you found inspiration and practical tips to help you on your journey towards a more contented life. If you enjoyed today's episode, please consider subscribing or following the podcast on your favorite platform. And don't forget to leave a review to let me know your thoughts. For more content and community support, be sure to follow on Instagram at Grounded Farm Wife. Remember, you're not alone in this journey. Together, we can continue to cultivate contentment in our lives. Until next time, take care and stay grounded.